the 9 o'clock hour of Cairo Nights. My name is Aaron Mason. I'm here jamming to these tunes, played by DB behind the ones and twos. Frank Shire, as you just heard, doing the news at the top of the hour. He'll be back 9:30 to do it again for us. The Online Trading Academy text line is 98973. Y'all are getting up in there tonight, having some conversations. I like it. It's good stuff. We talked yesterday about what we were going to call the 9 o'clock hour.
Oh, okay.
G likes the wind down for 8. Mm-hmm. 9 o'clock needs something, too. Home stretch, nightcap.
What are they, when a plane's coming in, it's called the final
descent? That's not bad. That's not bad. Do you have a better one out there? 98973. Let us know. I want to talk about Amazon and Alexa for a second. Specifically about kids. Now, I'm not a big fan of these devices. I think it's kind of weird to have something in your house that's listening to you constantly. I think this technology sort of showed up on the market, and we really didn't understand what it did. Do you have one of these, Frank?
I do. I have four.
Four?
I have Alexa. Actually, ours is called Echo. We renamed it. You're able to name it three different things, and instead of calling it Alexa, we call it Echo. Mm-hmm. We have the big one, the tall one with the good sound upstairs in the kitchen pass-through to the living room. And then we have two others downstairs.
Would you feel any differently if one of those was an Echo Dot Kids edition and you had a child in the house? Does that change anything for you?
Well, yeah, because I'm definitely where small children are concerned, I am a big advocate of little or no screen time, no cell phones, and certainly not access to the web by voice.
Yeah.
Bad idea. David's nodding his head.
He agrees.
Yes.
Amazon's catching some heat. They are currently the target of a pair of lawsuits that allege that they're violating laws in 8 states: Florida, Illinois, Michigan, Maryland, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and right here in Washington, that prohibit recording conversations without consent of their children or parents. And they are, according to this lawsuit, illegally storing recordings of children on these devices like Echo and Echo Dot. Now, at no point does Amazon warn unregistered users that it is creating recordings of their interactions with Alexa, which they are doing. And certainly they are not obtaining their consent to do that. And I think by not stating that, like, there's no opt-in or opt-out. Like, you don't know by default that this is happening. And I think this technology got out there. And by not saying that this is exactly what's happening, they sort of leave it up to us. Amazon leaves it up to us to assume that, well, they're not doing, of course, they're not keeping recordings of all of this stuff. That wouldn't be happening, but it is happening. And when children say a wake word to one of these devices,
usually Alexa,
the device records and transmits the children's communication in the same way that it handles adults' communication. And neither the children nor the parents have consented to the children's interactions being permanently recorded. That's a quote from the lawsuit. And not saying no is not the same thing as consenting. The absence of a no doesn't mean you consent to something. Well, they didn't say no, but they didn't say yes.
What they did was they brought it into the house, and that's why that's going to be, I assume that's going to be the defense that Amazon is going to use. You brought it into the house and you set it up. That's consent.
Well, Amazon has declined to comment on the lawsuits, and they pointed GeekWire to, which is where this article is from, pointed them to a blog post about Amazon Free Time, a content service for parents to manage their kids' Alexa usage. The blog post outlines Free Time's, quote, approach to family privacy and safety. But come on. That's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about the amount of time children spend with this device. We're talking about the fact that you are recording children and keeping those permanent recordings. And states have consent laws. Washington is one of them. And both parties, we know this, Frank, you especially, because you record interviews with people all the time.
Get their permission.
You have to let them know they're being recorded.
And the interesting thing about living with Alexa, or Echo, actually, is that it's always listening, and periodically it will pipe up without any word. Mm. In other words, in our household, you don't have to say Echo. It's been listening, and it will suddenly volunteer something out of nowhere. You would look at each other and say, okay, what did we say that triggered that?
Right.
It's listening.
Yeah, it's constantly listening. Back in April, people got pretty mad at Amazon because they found out that Amazon employees listen to Alexa conversations.
Do they?
It's like when you call customer service and they say this is being recorded for to help us improve your experience. That's exactly what Amazon says. Their goal is to improve this device, but in doing so, they have employees listen to your private conversations. It's absolutely insane. So now we're adding kids to the equation, and I just think you have to be really, really careful about this because we don't know the voice printing technology. I mean, this is getting bigger and bigger and more common and more common. And if you have recordings of someone's voice, there's a myriad of things that you could do. If you're an underhanded individual, you can really take advantage of some folks. So Amazon's at it again. I want to talk about a Supreme Court case next. It happened this week. And I'm going to bring it up, and you're going to roll your eyes, and you're going to go, I know what he's going to say. But you might not know my take on this guy. The Supreme Court this week rejected an atheist case to remove In God We Trust, which is our national motto, from coins and currency from the Department of Treasury. Michael Newdow, he is the same activist attorney who tried to remove Under God from the Pledge of Allegiance. He lost this case, arguing that Congress, their mandate to inscribe In God We Trust on currency was a government endorsement of religion and a violation of the First Amendment. He argued in his petition to the Supreme Court that because his clients are all atheist individuals or atheist groups, that the government violated their, quote, sincere religious belief in that there is no God and turned them into, quote, political outsiders by placing the phrase In God We Trust on their money. The justices rejected his petition without comment. And he also, this is the same guy who tried to silence prayer and any religious references at the inaugurations of George W. Bush and Barack Obama. I have no problem with, let's start with the inauguration. Let's start there. I have no problem with that whatsoever. It's tradition, right? I'm okay with that. You gotta have a little bit of a thick skin, right? Because you're people... No, people have different beliefs all the time. And if you're that easily offended by something, I think you kind of got to look inward and try and work up a little tolerance, right? I am not a religious person. I grew up that way. I am no longer that way. And so if you were to, you know, assume of me that because I don't believe in God, that I would be on this guy's side, I have to tell you, I'm not sure I am. I'm okay with this being thrown out. In God We Trust, in 1864, that was the first time it was put on an American coin. And that was due to, quote, increased religious sentiment. And then it was added to paper bills, coins and paper bills, in 1955. So that's when we started seeing In God We Trust on our bills. I do have a problem with In God We Trust. I do. I don't care that it's on our money. I don't care. I never look at it. It's fine. But the thing that bothers me is that it's not true. It's not true.
In money we trust.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And so it's just, it paints us as hypocrites, as a little bit hypocritical, that when you look at what our country does, and you look at what, when they say God, they're talking about the Christian God. Let's be fair here. When you align what we're doing now and the teachings of Jesus, there are lots of instances where they couldn't be any more disparate.
I mean, just capitalism in general is not a tenet of Jesus Christ, you know, in the New Testament necessarily.
Yeah, yeah, he was a hippy dippy dude. Yeah, I don't want to get on. I don't want to get on capitalism versus this ism versus that ism, but it's true that capitalism, as it exists, as we use it anyway, someone is always exploited. There's someone at the bottom who is getting taken advantage of and used for the benefit of people higher up that pyramid. And that feels very un-Jesus-y to me. That's all I have to say about it. Enough. Standing up on this soapbox. I got to get down. I teased this at the end of the last hour, and I really want to talk about it, and I really want to hear from you. 98973, the Online Trading Academy text line. You know when this has happened to me? It's happened with my ex-wife's grandfather and with my two grandmothers. At some point, older people in our lives have to stop driving. And it's such a sensitive subject because for a lot of older people, that's their last vestige of freedom. I was talking with G about this the other day, and he was saying how he had a grandfather who, or maybe it was an uncle, who he just wanted to go drive his Cadillac to the coffee shop every morning and back. That was it. But that was his routine. That gave him freedom. That made him feel like a person. But there's this weird gray area between clearly grandpa is endangering himself and others and, you know, a little bit before that, where it's not so obvious to call it quits, to have that difficult discussion. So over in Japan, they're working on a plan because they've had recently a spike in fatal accidents involving elderly drivers. 460 fatal traffic accidents in Japan last year by drivers 75 or older. That in 2008 was a little under 9% of all fatal traffic accidents. In 2018, it was up to almost 15%. So it's getting worse. So what are they going to do about it? Basically, it's a new driver's licensing system. And when you are someone of a certain age, at like 75 or older, when you go in to try and renew your driver's license, there are conditions put on it, qualifications you have to meet. They're talking right now about, they're sort of putting this plan together. They're still talking about it. It hasn't been fully implemented yet. But they're saying that, well, we need to talk about all this new safety technology that's coming out. So maybe if you want to be a driver and you're 75 or older, you have to have some sort of automatic brake system in your car, a sensor that detects if someone's right in front of you and it will stop that car. They're saying different times of the day. It's much like when younger people, it's circle of life, man. It's younger people when they get their license, there are conditions put on that. Apparently in Japan, one in four people who are 80 or older still drive. And that percentage, of course, is higher in rural areas because public transportation services are limited and cars are indispensable for doctor's appointments. That's a huge one. I mean, it's a big deal and it's a difficult conversation. So they're starting to talk about it and that makes me very happy. I can tell you about when I used to live in Florida. And just north of Tampa. And I had to, because of my job as a landscaper down there, I had to go get a license certification to drive a big truck. And I went to the DMV. And as I'm sitting there waiting to take this test, there's a very old man and what I assume is his granddaughter there at the DMV to renew his license. He had to do an eye test. And so he looks into the machine with his glasses on. And the person behind the desk goes, and he's looking at it for a couple seconds. You know, read the top line, she says. So he goes down. And they're like, oh, no, you have to take your glasses off. Well, my man just remembered those three letters. And so he spat him back out. And he got his license renewed. And Florida, you know, there are a lot of gray heads down there. A lot of white heads down in Florida. And they cause a lot of accidents, but I think that's great. And it's a really, really difficult conversation. That's all. One last thing. Remember that video? It was a couple weeks ago. Deep fake, they call it. That's the term for these videos where you see someone talking, but they've never actually said that. There was a video of Nancy Pelosi that had been altered to make it look like she was drunk and not finishing her sentences. And so it was posted on Facebook and Instagram, and Facebook, who owns Instagram, they caught some heat. And they're like, guys, you just said that you were going to take down fake news, that you were going to try and monitor this stuff. And Facebook was like, no. We're not going to take it down. It doesn't have to be true for you to post it on Facebook, but we'll limit its exposure. We won't recommend it in our algorithms to other people. We'll kind of keep it condensed. So there are these artists in the UK that decided we're going to test Facebook and we're going to see if they're going to stay true to their word. And they took video of Mark Zuckerberg and they made it look like and sound like he was saying the following.
Imagine this for a second. One man with total control of billions of people's stolen data, all their secrets, their lives, their futures. I owe it all to Spectre. Spectre showed me that whoever controls the data controls the future.
Spectre is the name of the artist group. That's their installation. They've done similar deepfakes with Kim Kardashian and a bunch of other celebrities. But this is, to Facebook's credit, and I don't start sentences like that very often, they said, nope, we're going to leave it up. We said what we said, and we're going to stick to it. But guys, this technology is so dangerous. It's so dangerous. That was just a voice actor and a video of Mark Zuckerberg. And eventually, when this technology becomes indistinguishable from reality, we're going to have to figure out what in the world we're going to do. Coming up next on Cairo Nights, Mesa Stories. See you after the break. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I'm Aaron Mason. G. Scott's out. He's sick tonight. Feel better, G. It's time for Mesa's Stories. We've got Frank Shires in here, DB. Before we start, man, I got some people upset.
Did you?
What
did you do?
A few text line folks are mad at me. Because I said, maybe you should back up your religious talk with your actions. You know who said that? The Bible. Faith without works is dead, they say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Old Testament.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
That's King James.
Yes, it is.
Yes, sir. We're having a good time. I like, agree or disagree, it's all about having the conversation.
Sure.
That's all it is. And I like it. Thanks for texting in, everybody. Mesa's Stories. You guys are readers.
Yep.
You read books.
Yep.
Do you still go to the library? Mm-mm. Do you still check out books?
No, my wife does.
Yeah?
At least she used to. Yeah.
Yeah, people don't do it as much anymore.
Yeah.
But back in 1967, it was a big thing. Okay. People were at the libraries all the time. No internet. It's where you had to go. Well, a reader in England has returned a late library book 52 years after it was borrowed. back in 1967. Wow. And not only did they return the late book, they included a check for $100 to cover any late fees. They felt really guilty about it. The manager of the library said that she was amazed when this poetry book arrived with a letter explaining the delay. They said they settled after moving around a lot and found the book. They were super embarrassed and can only think that they took it out while staying in the area of this library in the late 60s. So they enclosed the book. They sent a check. The stamp on it, the old school stamp on the card, like we used to do, said it was due back in 1967. And the librarian there says, you know, we get books. We get late books. That happens. But not this late. This is the longest one we know about. The fine, here's the funny part. The check was for $100, right? The fine would have been about 3 cents a week, meaning that after 52 years, the borrower would have owed like $33. And even now, when you update it to like 15 cents a day, it still doesn't add up. And the charges are capped at like $7.50. Like, you never pay more than $7.50 anymore, even if the book is super duper late. So $100. I feel good about that.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I think it's so funny because in my mom's eye, at least, if you are at a point where you just still have the book and they're not like, obviously the library is not going to come and try to collect from you.
Right.
The book's just yours.
Right.
Like, the amount of books in my parents' home that are from the Seattle Public Library Green Lake branch is astounding.
Yeah, I've never seen Dog the Bounty Hunter go after an overdue library book. I think there are other things they need to spend their time doing. The moon has been in the news. And I love the moon. I'm a space guy. I like astronauts and cosmology and rocketry and all that fun stuff. And we remember the Apollo missions, right? That's Apollo 11 was the mission where the first man walked on the moon. We all know, okay, there are three guys involved. There's Neil Armstrong, we all know, first man on the moon. Buzz Aldrin, second man on the moon. But there was a third astronaut that had to stay in the capsule flying around the moon. I can't offer to give a prize. I don't think I'm legally allowed to do that. But I will give you an imaginary $100 if anyone can tell me who that third person was. Do you want me to I'll spoil it.
Please, yeah, I have no... I mean, I know that there was a third person, and I only know that because I don't remember who it was.
Michael Collins. Astronaut Michael Collins. Which goes to show, if you ain't first, and then maybe second, if you're talking about moonwalking, that's it, man.
I mean, he picked the... he has the normal name, like Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. They sound very sort of... There's a gravitas to it. His name does not sound particularly astronautish.
No, it's not astronautish, Michael Collins. So the Apollo missions, right, July 20th, 1969, that's when we landed on the moon. The Apollo 11, Apollo 13, we all remember from the famous movie, was named after a Greek god, Apollo. Apparently, Apollo has a twin sister named Artemis. And so NASA, they're going to try and send people back to the moon, and they're going to call this program Artemis. Preparations have already started. We're gunning for 2024. It was going to be 2028, but Mike Pence was like, hey, let's do it while DT's still prez. And they're like, well, 2024, okay, we'll try. But it's also going to give us the first female moonwalker, which I think is a big deal. There was a story not too long ago about how female astronauts weren't able to do spacewalks because those suits didn't fit them. They were only designed for men. It's crazy stuff. So I really like this. They are building this giant booster rocket, taller than a 30-story building. And they're going to blast this crew capsule, They're calling it Orion, on a mission to the moon and back. Now, it's going to be uncrewed, this very first one. There aren't going to be any people on it. But then in 2022, that's going to be, they're aiming for next year. And then in 2022, they're going to send four astronauts up there. And then when they get back, they're going to build a small space station in orbit around the moon. This is real life. This is not science fiction. This is not a movie. This is actually happening. And then NASA, they'll dock a lunar lander at that moon space station. And that year, that same year, four astronauts will fly to the space station, board the lander, and then get down on the moon. Now, there are a lot of uncertainties, a lot of hurdles here to deal with. Political hurdles, budgetary hurdles, technological hurdles, and trying to get this all done by 2024, like I said, this abbreviated timeline. But I wasn't around in 1969. Neither were you, DB. I know Frank was, but he's out there doing the news he has to do, getting that together. But I've read and I've watched and I've heard about how we all came together. Kennedy was like, we're going to the moon, baby. And all of America got space crazy. And we got it done. That is such a rare thing anymore. And part of me maybe is being a little romantic about it. Like, wouldn't it be great if we could all come together again and unite around one thing and, like, put people back on the moon? Yeah, let's make it the moon. I'm nostalgic about that. Let's do it. That would be great. So I'm hoping for it. That's my story about the moon. Real quick before we go, DB, you drink that bubble tea?
No, I explicitly do not drink bubble tea.
Ooh, staunchly anti-bubble tea. Let me give you two words and you tell me if this is going to be a happy story or not. CAT scan and bubble tea. Because there was a girl in China and she was talking about, man, I got some problems. I got some intestinal issues. She's talking to her parents, stomach pain. They go to the hospital, they scan her, and more than 100 granular shadows showed up in her abdomen from her stomach to, you know, the last part. The doctor asked, like, what have you been eating? She said, well, I had a bubble tea 5 days ago. One bubble tea. Sure you did, girl. You lying to your doctor, you lying to your parents, and now you're lying to Cairo Knights. We don't take kindly to that. So listen, y'all know the bubble tea, the little tapioca balls. It's cool once in a while, a lot of calories, but if you're into it, be into it. But let's not get crazy. Everything in moderation. When we come back here on Cairo Knights, we want to hear what's on your mind. Welcome back to Cairo Knights. Maren Mason. Frank Shires, DB. Joining us for the last part of the show, it's What's on Your Mind. We, of course, want to hear what's on your mind. 98973 is the Online Trading Academy text line. If you can get those in real quick, let us know what you're thinking. Can be anything. I'm cool with that. Coast to Coast coming up at 10. All y'all tuning in, hello. Nice to not meet you.
It's kind of here.
Kind of how it goes on the radio. Who would like to go first, gentlemen? Anyone?
All right, I'll hop on.
There he is.
This past week, or actually the past 2 weeks, my girlfriend and I have been moving into our new place, which has been just really, you know, stressful as moving is, where we did not have the money to rent a U-Haul, so we're having to divide it up between whose parents have a truck and when can that truck be in Seattle and all this stuff, and and having to pay double rent, which is a big thing, and just a financial woe. And all of this was sort of boiling down to be really stressful and sort of straining on both of us. You know, we both work really long hour jobs each day, and a couple of days ago we had sort of moved some boxes, and it was in the heat of the afternoon, and it was warm. It was very warm, and we're sweaty, and we're just like, I'm kind of in a bad mood. And our apartment's on Aurora, and I look out the window, and clear and pretty as a picture out on the horizon is Mount Rainier. Mm. And it looked astounding. Mm. And it clicked. And I was like, it's going to be fine. This is where we're living, and I'm very much okay with it. And so I think, I don't know what's on my mind other than if you sort of can barrel through the hard stuff, it gets better, and especially with moving.
And take a second Amen. To notice the good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's important.
So I've been worked up all day about this story from the University of Washington.
Yeah.
Where the woman's volleyball player was sexually assaulted by an executive with the University of Washington Athletic Department. And it was all swept under the rug. The university did a investigation. They agreed to pay her $20,000 for counseling. The guy quit before they could do anything to him.
Mm-hmm.
He took another job and then ended up down at a vice president of a college in Arizona. And the thing that's bothered me about this all day, beyond the fact that I find it deeply offensive that this would happen at one of our state universities, and which we all pay for, right?
Yeah.
Is the fact that the president of the college, Anna Marie Cauchy, kept it to herself, didn't tell the public, and there was no legal action taken against this guy. It was all quietly covered up. And I project myself, daughter, going to college,
yep,
going to be an athlete, and I think, man, is that the way? Is that the way we handle this sort of thing in today's world? And so I've been kind of, you know, really unsettled about that all day, cranky about it. You know, I'm really unhappy about that story on a lot of different levels.
Cranky Frankie.
Cranky Frankie.
Justifiably so.
Good.
I'm laughing, but it's a very serious thing.
Yeah, it is. And it upsets me. How about you?
I've been thinking about, there seems to be a lot of pressure on, and maybe you don't feel this so much, Frank, being outside of the social media sphere, but so much pressure on being productive and filling every moment with something and doing this and doing that and keeping up with the Joneses type things.
Right.
And I don't think that's good.
It's not.
For all of us,
no.
For individuals, slow down, everybody.
Yeah.
It's okay to be lazy. And I have to tell myself that, that every once in a while. It's okay. Sit on the couch, have some chips, watch a movie. It's a good time. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to Cairo Nights. Really appreciate it. Thank you, Frank and DB, for helping me out tonight, flying solo, last minute, without a G-Scott. Be back tomorrow, 7 to 10 p.m., like we do, Monday through Friday. Until then, thank you so much. Listening to Cairo Nights.